Once a year, movie fans from near and far flock to the French Riviera resort of Cannes to catch a glimpse of their favorite celluloid stars. Real stars, in the flesh. They've always seemed larger than life, particularly on a big screen. Now, though, in the age of virtual reality, what exactly is real? These days, what still resonates is authentic in the make-believe world of cinema. The Hollywood actors and screenwriters strike of 2023 was a lot about technology encroaching on artistic creation, stealing the hard work of some, pushing others out of a job. So, is AI good or bad for movies and movie making, for the industry and for the spectator? What kind of demand in the digital age is there for movies? And with so much of the planet spending hours a day already on screens, how is it changing not just film, but you might ask, humanity as a whole? Today in the France 24 debate, AI goes to the movies. With us, Thomas Sotinel, film and television critic for French broadsheet of record Le Monde. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Also with us, television screenwriter, member of the French Writers Guild, Frédéric Crivin. Your credits include the award-winning series about life under Nazi occupation, A French Village.
Yes.
With us from London, screenwriter Katharina Ghislaine-Vicken, co-founder of Metrotone Studios. Rumor has it you've packed your bags and you are headed to Cannes.
That's right, Francois. Tomorrow morning.
Well, thanks for being with us. And thanks for joining us from Reading, England, Dominic Lees, associate professor of filmmaking at the University of Reading. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
You can always, by the way, listen. That's right, listen to the debate wherever podcasts are streamed. Cannes has its customs. One of them is, when you look at the lineup, is the premiering of any zany and quirky offering by U.S. director Wes Anderson, his latest star-studded film, The Phoenician Scheme, in competition for the Golden Palm. Maybe we can show images of that. The Phoenician Scheme... one of those quirky Wes Anderson movies. Thomas Sotinel, a little bit like the French director Jean-Pierre Jeunet, it's all about the editing, it's all about the post-production, and they do use green screens. When you look at a Wes Anderson movie, it's highly original, but he makes use of all the new technology that's at hand.
He does, I guess. I haven't been on one of his sets, but Wes Anderson, there's a very famous Instagram feed, which is called Accidentally Wes Anderson. And so it shows that what Wes Anderson films in his movies does occur in real life. So I think Wes Anderson is more of a creator who uses the quirks of the real world to build his own world. And it's very artificial, of course, but I don't think it's that much, it uses that much digital technology.
So, Dominic Lees, is it easier or harder to make a Wes Anderson movie in 2025?
I think it's probably as hard as ever. If you've got such an original mind as Wes Anderson, it's a remarkable task trying to make one of those Wes Anderson movies. But what you will find in terms of AI is that highly stylized filmmaking of this sort can be recognized by models that are designed to recognize patterns in creativity and reproduce them.
So, Katharina Ghislaine-Vicken, does that mean I can feed into a large language model all the Wes Anderson movies and I can come up with that sort of beautiful Kodachrome color he has or those pacey edits?
Well, you could certainly approach the look, for sure. But for those out there who still think that you can type a prompt in and then just make a movie as good as when Wes Anderson does, I'm here to disappoint you. That's definitely not possible yet. But you could certainly approach the look if you asked it to do that.
And when you approach the look, is that inspiration or is it theft?
Well, if you type in, give me a Wes Anderson shot with Wes Anderson lighting, I would definitely say that you are not creating something original. And I don't think that's what AI is there for at all. And certainly me as a maker, I try to avoid at all costs asking it to reproduce anybody's work. I'm a writer first. I have the same concerns as the entire industry has right now. But it's certainly a wonderful creative tool that you can use in any number of ways. And as ever, it's what you put into it.
What you put into it. So Frédéric Krivine, AI is not at all a threat to creative minds like those present.
That's a fairy tale you're talking about. The question maybe is not, will it kill creativity? On the short term, it will kill jobs. I'm a representative, as you know, at the French Guild. I mean, it's really an economic question and a question of term.
So for writers, break it down for us. Why will it kill job for screenwriters?
No, for writers, right now, it's not killing job. For dubbing, for example, it will kill jobs, despite we just learned today with Thomas that apparently Japanese laws now forbid using AI for the dubbing in for films in Japan. But for dubbing, the software available are so experts that we may imagine that for producers, it will be costly effective to use these softwares. For the writing, because you're right, my job is the writing. Right now, I would say that 3/4 of the writers are using softwares, AI softwares, for the early parts of the development.
How do you do it?
I don't do it. I do it only to make warnings about what is going to come. But how the writers do it, there is the research part, which is very important when you make a script. The research about, I don't know if it's an historical show, for example. You want to know everything with a synthetic view about fascism in Italy in the 20s, let's say. You will have a very good quality of research with the latest software. I won't name, of course, not to make...
Following that example, can you then ask AI to give you a script where the actors speak spoke in the 1920s?
Maybe you will have clues. The research means before writing,
you have
to do research to understand, if you are interested in that, what were the main topics, politically speaking, in Italy in the 20s, which were the main parties. It's something you could do before with Google, but with these softwares, you can ask quite precise questions, and you have a synthetic answer of very high quality.
So that's a good news story.
That's a good news, but about AI, as other innovations, you have to... if you want to know if it's good or bad, you have to have a wider see. Of course, when you are looking for something precise, it's a good news because it's quicker and maybe better, the research. Then to stay on the writing, on the first steps of the writing, when the project is still not very precise, the software is a kind of partner, never tired. Who can answer to your questions about the topic you're writing about. So you want a love story between a man and a woman, and the brother of the man is also in love with the woman, and it's during the war, and blah, 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 and blah, blah, blah. And you can begin a dialogue with the machine which will propose to you... a possible scenario.
But this sounds like a movie we saw, the Spike Jonze movie Her, where he has this artificial intelligence voice and he gets into a dialogue with it and falls in love with it.
Science fiction books and films have already treated 95% of nearly all the problems that we can see right now. All the topics, all the questions about whether the machine will replace. It's a long story, not being able to do it, but thinking about it, it's a 70 or 80 year story.
So, Katerina Galeid-Vicken, you heard the predicament there, Frédéric. He's been up all night writing. He's getting a little bit tired, and he's got that AI tool that he can bounce off of. Again, is that a good news or a bad news story?
Well, here's the thing that I think is really important as artists to delineate between, and that is what has been done by the large AI companies and what we do now. Because the truth is they didn't ask for permission. Silicon Valley really never does. And they've barged ahead and they've done it. And this didn't happen overnight. It happened a long time ago. Our data being scraped from every single site of whatever we did online, YouTube, Instagram, whatever you like, Facebook, playing nice little games. All of our data was taken a long time ago. And AI really is a very pretty tool. The filmmaking side of it is a very pretty tool that's come only now. And that's something they already did, and they raised billions and billions off of it. And the question is, that's a tidal wave, and we are right to be concerned about our jobs, but what do we do now, and what guardrails do we now set in place? And there certainly has to be some, because yes, it can be easy to, you know, to research your writing. I personally don't need it for my writing, and I always think we will need humans in every part of the process. But it's very important to distinguish between those two, because what are the companies responsible for the situation we are in, and what do we do now with this tidal wave that's here?
How do you protect it? I mean, we know with photographs, the news agencies now are able to put little calcs inside of their photos that prevent them from being duplicated for free. You can't do that, though, with screenplays.
No, you can't. And it's very hard. As a writer, I don't have a lot of faith in opting out either in these engines. But I will say that AI is a pretty poor writer. So we do have to worry about our ideas, everything we've ever fed into it. Can certainly be scraped. But as a writer, if you ask it to produce a script for you, it's still quite poor. So I do still believe in the human side of it. But I don't very much believe in opting out. I do think we do have to be concerned about that.
Still quite poor. Dominic Lise, that sentence, should I be worried that AI will get better at it?
Yes, absolutely. AI will progressively get more accurate, will become better. We're moving on from the stage where huge models were created by pouring all of our data into them in the hope that the bigger the data set, the better quality the output. As Katerina has explained, that was on the basis of theft of our copyright to our images, text, and video. And we're moving on to a stage where you'll get much more precise models. So they're based just on very, very precise data sets. I mean, you imagine, for instance, all of the Wes Anderson scripts being put into one model in order to create a new Wes Anderson style film script. Those are the kind of developments that we're going to see in terms of the development of the quality. And if we look at the way generative AI is developing its quality in movie making, the real major achievement so far has been in sound. It's quite remarkable how voice clones have been used in the film industry. And in fact, in the Oscars campaign, there were two controversies over Emilia Perez and The Brutalist.
Let's talk about that, because you do wonder, when does an Academy Award come with an asterisk behind it? Adrian Brody, winning Best Actor for The Brutalist, the story of a World War II concentration camp survivor who emigrates to America to start over. In an interview with trade publication Red Shark News, the editor, David Jankso, explained, he's Hungarian, that he used the services of a Ukraine AI company called Respeecher. He said in that interview, "I'm a native Hungarian speaker, and I know that it is one of the most difficult languages to learn to pronounce." Is that a controversy? Did he do something wrong touching up, if you will, Adrian Brody's voice when he's speaking in Hungarian?
I think you've described it very well when you say touching up, because David Yancho was listening to the actors who worked really, really hard to learn their Hungarian dialogue and speak American with a Hungarian accent. There's terrific work by Felicity Jones and Adrian Brody in the movie. But David Yancho could hear some of the vowels in the Hungarian the actors were speaking, didn't seem just right to him as a Hungarian speaker. So Respeecher helped him just tweak those vowels to make it sound really perfect to a Hungarian audience. Now, the really important thing is no one noticed until David Yancho in an interview mentioned that he'd worked with Respeecher in order to improve those vowels. And then the controversy kicked off.
Is it a controversy for you? Personally, is it a controversy?
No, that's not a controversy for me at all. And Adrian Brody did not get the Oscar for Best Actor for speaking Hungarian in a beautiful way. He got the Oscar for his extraordinary interpretation of that part. I think the controversy was completely misjudged. We have to remember that these are really, the ways that voice cloning is being used are very enabling. I mean, if we take Emilia Perez as the other Oscar controversy that happened, Cyril Holtz, the sound designer, realized that the lead actress, Carla Sofia Gascón, her vocal range wouldn't quite make the songs that had been written for her to sing. And they had no option. Either they get another singer to sing the lead character's songs, or they use AI to stretch the vocal range of the lead actress. And what the audience gets is the audience gets the performer herself delivering those songs rather than a voice double. And these are gains for the film industry, and it's gains for that actor herself.
Thomas Sotinel, musical artist for years, there's been complaints about them putting their voice through a sound machine. Again, is this a problem, any of this?
Well, it's not a problem per se. I mean, anyway, cinema has always been caught in the tension between the Lumière, who has the Lumière brothers, who show you the world as it is, and Georges Méliès, who invented things that couldn't exist in the real world. So there's this tension between the two. When you go, you were showing clips of the taken on the set of the last Mission Impossible movie. We like those movies, or people like those movies, because we know that Tom Cruise is taking incredible risks to shoot them. This is...
Because he does his own stunts.
Because he does his own stunts. But we also know that all that we see on screen is not real, that he's not inside a gigantic computer. He's not... these are movie sets, and some of them are... It's always been like this. I mean, for in every movie, some of the lines, the actors flub some lines and you have to re-record it. And these are Foley artists who do re-record it. It's not the original actor. And it's been going on for decades, and no one is saying that this is a controversy. The problem with AI is that we feel, and I think we are right, that it is the start of a new way of working, and we don't know how far it will go and how wide it will overtake the old ways of working.
And as somebody who's paid a lot of money to watch television and movies, do you smell something different in the way things have been made the last few years? We remember that movie, The Irishman, a few years ago, where they managed to make Robert De Niro and Al Pacino look younger.
Ever since digital technologies have been used in the movies and in TV shows, things have changed. Remember when we saw Gladiator for the first time, it was... Everybody was comparing the crowds in Ben-Hur, which were real actors, and the crowds in Gladiators, which were just pixels and not very good at that because it was the start of the technology. So it's an ongoing process where many things that were depending on the actual objects are replaced by digital objects, and not only on screen, but on the soundtrack and now in the scripts.
And there is this feeling of we're heading into, as you described, the unknown. Cannes likes to project old school credentials, the festival. This year's rules, by the way, include a ban on nude-look dresses on the red carpet. Its organizer, Thierry Frémaux, though, moving with the times when it comes to technology.
The team working on the festival in Paris has been trained in AI. I couldn't be there because I was traveling abroad. We welcomed people from the team with my voice, saying welcome. It's scary, it's frightening. In any event, it's a fundamental question. It's a question of society as well. More globally speaking, it doesn't just concern cinema.
Okay, so he feels a little uneasy about it, but he did it anyway. He did it anyway, pre-recording his voice and using the thing. And I think Cannes hosts an AI festival as one of its side festivals while it's there. So, Frédéric Rivine, your thoughts on how the industry is moving with the times?
So I'm a TV guy, so I'm less good. I'm not like Thomas, a specialist of cinema. Well, I think at the Guild, we think the question is not wrong, or is it wrong or right, as you ask. The questions are more when and how, I think. Because good and bad, or right or wrong, I think it hides the real problem. And the real problem concerning the writing is the economy. I mean, when the productivity of writing will be really changed by the softwares to make scripts, which is not the case as far as I know, you will have a kind of tsunami in the writing. But it's not the case right now. I mean, writers are using AI to develop the early stage of the scripts, not to make a full scenario right now. So
so they can cut down on the number of days they pay the writers.
The WGA made a strike, including this topic. But I mean, that's what could come if you have a writing room to make a daily show of 10 writers, and if you have really a software that we don't have right now, which can deliver a first draft enough good to be rewritten by 2 writers instead of 10, considering the weight of the salaries of a writing room, it's a tsunami, of course. But we are not here right now. But the question is not, will we be there? Of course we will, but I don't know if it's in 5 years, 10 years, or 20. And another question is, many people ask, will the machine replace man, and that kind of fascinating philosophical problem. But that's not the problem. The problem is just before AI, what is writing? What is creative really in the writing? Because when you see many books that you can buy on stations or several daily shows, you more or less feel that you see always the same thing for 40 years. It's always more or less the same. So you can imagine that you could modelize this writing quite easily. So the question is, what is really creative? AI, ask this question to all the writers. In the writing you're doing, what is really creative?
Hasn't this, Dominic Leese, always been the case? There's so much money involved in the movie industry that oftentimes the big production studios are risk adverse. We see how in Hollywood there are all these, you know, sequel franchises. Whenever a movie works well nowadays, they don't want to take any risks anymore. AI will just accentuate that because the marketing tools and the writing tools will push everybody in one direction.
Oh, that's right. Hey, the standardization
right
is
to say that repetitive nature of some of the genres of film in film and television is heaven for AI, because AI loves looking for patterns and duplicating them. And so if you've got a regular police procedural format, it can ingest that, you know, millions of episodes and can reproduce that genre very, very accurately, and in a way that many people think will be convincing enough for the future audience. So then that ties with your point you're making about the economic driver to make more content for less money. And that's exactly the motivation of a lot of producers to adopt AI. This was also, of course, the reason behind the SAG-AFTRA dispute. What had been happening prior to that was that background artists, that we also call extras, at the end of their day's work were being grabbed and put into a volumetric capture studio. Their image was being stolen so that that could be reproduced in any crowd scene that that producer wants to make any time in the future. And that would mean the producer wouldn't have to pay for those extras again. So the economic imperative is absolutely behind the development of AI. And the really, really important thing is to make sure that AI is used to enhance creativity rather than to flatten it.
Right. And do you get the sense, Katarina Gelein-Vicken, that there'll be less diversity in the stories that are told with artificial intelligence?
I do worry about that sometimes, and I think there's been studies done on music that music is actually now flatter. There's less variety, and we're all listening to sort of, you know, more generic stuff than we used to do back in the day. But it always depends on the makers, doesn't it? And one thing about AI is there's a lot of new makers entering the space that weren't there before. Now, I live in Britain. Britain's a very class-divided country, and I have AI-making friends who make the argument that, you know, nobody complained when they came from the cashiers at Morrison's job, but now that it's coming from these filmmaking jobs, now we're all screaming about it. But they're people who didn't necessarily afford the right schools to go to enter the film industry, so they're very happy about it, that they now have a shot. And these things always have two sides. You know, it's a nuanced debate. We're struggling with how they went about acquiring the data, and we don't like that at all. But then there's the side to it that, for example, me as a writer, my script sitting on a hard drive for 7 months will not create any jobs at all. But if I can make somebody see the pilot that I made with AI and they pick it up for broadcast, for a series, then I've suddenly created however many jobs to create that show. So I do worry that it will become more monotonous because of algorithms, not because of the creation of AI, but of how we've constructed the internet to be right now. And that's why we have to have certain guardrails in place and have these debates.
And Katarina, there's also the question of how the viewing public will view movies. With artificial intelligence, there are those stealing original content. There are those signing contracts that go beyond the grave. The makers of Star Wars signed a couple of years back with legendary actor James Earl Jones before he died last September. They have the rights to keep on using that distinctive baritone of his for the part of Darth Vader long into the future. Again, is that good or bad, Katarina?
Well, again, it probably has two sides, right? A lot of us love that voice, and a lot of us would like to hear it again. For the studios, money-wise, of course, this is always, money has run the film industry since the dawn of time and the TV industry. So if a studio can get away with it and do it and say, well, we own the rights to it, you can bet that they will try to do it. The question is, how will the public respond to that? My guess is some will love it, some will not. Some will question, what does his family think of it? You know, and these are the things that actors now really have to watch for their contracts, that they're not signing away their rights in perpetuity.
Frédéric Crivigne, you're saying that they're talking about
making a sequel
to Casablanca with the original actors.
With AI.
With AI.
We will know if Ingrid Bergman will go with her husband or with Humphrey Bogart. And as your English friend said, a part of the public will find that disgusting, another part will love it. it's a big commercial appeal.
All right, outside of Hollywood and the big studios, there are those who see the opportunities of AI. Senegal-based producer and director Hussein Dembele Sow, the co-creator of this short film about the 1944 Tiahua massacre of African soldiers who, after fighting for France in World War II, mutinied upon their return home to demand their pay. Many of them were killed. And this is done entirely with AI.
In less than 2 years, these tools will be able to generate narrative content of more than 2 minutes, coherent enough to be on air. Africa can play a role, not as a late user, but as a direct contributor. Generative cinema is not ready to replace movies, but it's currently rewriting the way they are made, financed, and produced. Those who are working on it early will be the ones using it well in the future.
A lot of enthusiasm there, and his enthusiasm, Thomas Sotina, is Africans are going to have, we don't have the means to tell our own stories with grand productions. This is our chance.
Yes, of course. This is something we have already seen when the first digital cameras came up. They were a way for filmmakers who didn't have many resources at hand to make films without the cost of a film of developing and everything. And it's, of course, they will use it, and it's a tool. It is a tool that can be used by people who don't have access to the means of production that the big studios have, in, of course, in Hollywood or in Europe.
Dominique Lisse, this will mean that we can go to other parts of the globe for... Again, telling diverse stories like the ones that we fear may go away if AI tells us what kind of stories to write.
Absolutely. It is certainly an enabling technology for filmmakers who've been outside the mainstream and who've been unable to command the huge budgets. So now a young filmmaker... In the old days, would have thought if I'm making a first film or a second film, it should be a very contained story about a small number of people, a chamber piece. Now they can make a period drama. They can make a sci-fi because they can use AI technology to create those visual effects that until now were only possible by big budget filmmakers. So filmmakers all across the world have access to them. And there's other ways in which film culture is going to be enabled by AI. If we think about language being a barrier to the export of fascinating films from all over the world, now translation is very, very easy and very, very quick because of generative AI. So if you're a small filmmaker in Laos or Cambodia, you wanting to send your film around the world, you can dub that for very, very little money and have access to a huge market, which may enrich your film industry and also in terms of us receiving those films, enriches our own world cinema culture.
Even if it kills the jobs in some instances of dubbing artists. Dominic, you were mentioning earlier the pushback against the big Hollywood studios getting the digital footprint of extras on sets. Tech companies, their argument is that they need to loosen copyright laws. They say they can compete with China under the existing U.S. laws, and that in the name of national security, they need unfettered access to art. Of course, the U.S. president has a different solution.
Movie tariffs, what they've done is other nations have been stealing the movies, the movie-making capabilities from the United States. And I said to a couple of people, what do you think? I've done some very strong research over the last week, and we're making very few movies now. Hollywood is being destroyed.
Hollywood's being destroyed, Katerina Galane-Vicken. Tariffs is what Donald Trump says. I don't know how serious he is about that, but is that what the Silicon Valley wants for Hollywood?
Well, I don't know about that, but they, you know, it certainly is bringing about huge change, and Silicon Valley just seem to want to take over most things these days. But the tariff question has shook up the entire film industry, for, you know, rightly so. We've only just come out of COVID. We've only just come out of a very difficult period, full stop. So it's hardly welcome news. But tech and media is now merging more than ever. So it's incumbent upon us to try to set the guardrails in place for artists so that we don't drown in that tidal wave.
Yeah, when you see a company, Frédéric Krivine, like Amazon, which has a major film studio, what are your thoughts on this going forward? That there's the Northern California taking over Southern California here, the Silicon Valley taking over Hollywood. How does that impact the future of the industry?
Oh, I'm not qualified for that. I mean, it's too my concern is about, on the short term, not saying we are against AI, because I think it's completely crazy. It would be completely crazy, like being against, I don't know, computers or electricity. But how we're gonna make this thing happen? This thing will happen. How? We will let it happen. That's really my concern. By the laws, maybe the laws which could make this change not too heavy, and by for everyone asking everyone must wonder what is a creative situation, what is not replaceable now by the machine. That's really a main concern.
What is a creative situation? Dominic Lees, your thoughts on this, because everybody, we're told, can be a creator nowadays with their phone. So what is a is humanity more creative or less?
It's absolutely undoubted that the technologies that we're witnessing are democratizing the access to forms of creativity. And film has always been such an expensive art form that only the elite have been able to access. Digital technology that we've already talked about created a wave of new filmmaking, and AI filmmaking will become its own form as well. I think it'd be a different form of creativity. And we're already used to different forms of film, from feature films, documentary films, experimental films. I think we're going to see a new wave of creativity around the AI film. So films that are made entirely by the creator sitting at their computer at a desk and using generative AI tools to create cinematic worlds. And we'll begin to accept that as a new form of cinema. And as as we're already seeing, last month in Nice, there was the World AI Film Festival. Increasingly, our cinema culture will begin to really embrace this as a new but actually distinct form of film culture.
And what about audiences' attention span? Nowadays, when people stream or watch movies at home, they often have their cell phones out while they're watching.
And I think that's in a way a separate issue about how the audience has developed in the era of smartphones and shortening attention spans. And I think what we're seeing creatively outside mainstream filmmaking is an abundance of ultra-short content. And that, again, is a content which is, in a way, it's very free. It's the kind of content that can be created without the constraints of having to get a screenplay greenlit before it goes into production. If a creator is making very short content that will be distributed on the internet, they are the person who decides, shall I greenlight my project or shan't I greenlight my project? And I'll go ahead and make my 90-second or 3-minute film.
All right. A final word about the Cannes Film Festival. So many formulaic films, we say these days, out of Hollywood. Cannes is a feeder for original content. Case in point, last year's Golden Palm winner, Anora, also winning Best Picture at the Oscars. We had the same with Parasite, doing well in the U.S. afterwards. A film like Anatomy of a Fall, the French movie, in 2023, doing very well. Thomas Sotinel, as a veteran of Cannes, is Cannes always the same, or is Cannes changing in the digital
age? No, Cannes is changing because it has to, because the way films are made, the people who make the films change, so Cannes does change. But yes, what you are saying about the originality of the films in Cannes can be... I was thinking about the biggest hit on the biggest TV show of the last months. It's Adolescence, which is absolutely...
A British crime
TV
drama.
Show. Very realistic, shot in a way... episodes in a single shot, in a single shot, so you can cheat, you cannot cheat, and with real people in real situations, and that's what drew the attention of the public and the
authenticity of it,
the authenticity and the relatability of the situations. So that's still a very important factor in deciding, and I think that maybe AI can help to make that kind of shows or films. But the important term in this is intelligence, because the studios, the big Hollywood studios for a long time have turned their back on intelligence and want just to be sure are formulaic and don't want innovation. And maybe AI could be a way to inject some more intelligence in the creative process.
All right. On that happy note, we will have to say goodbye. Thomas Sotinel, I want to thank you. I want to thank Frédéric Krivine for being with us, Dominic Lys in Reading, Katerina Galain-Vick, and good luck at Cannes to you. Thank you for being with us here in the France 24 debate.